If you're like me, getting back in shape is always a goal, but that's what it remains, a goal. That's why I'm excited about our new advertiser, FitBod. FitBod is a fitness app that tailors workouts to fit your life, your goals, your gear, and even your schedule. It's like having a personal trainer in your pocket. Whether you're a gym rat or just trying to get back in the groove like me, FitBod evolves with you, tweaking routines to push your limits and maximize your gains. And FitBod keeps things fun, mixing in different exercises, reps, supersets, and circuits. It's like a new challenge every time you work out. It's time to ditch the boring routines and kickstart your fitness journey. Add FitBod to your workout essentials. Join FitBod today to get your personalized workout plan. Get 25% off your subscription by trying the app for free at fitbod.me/Zabe. Charlie, Zulu, Alpha, Bravo, Echo. That's fitbod.me/Zabe.
The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Today on the Zabecast, no football, no problem. I spent all weekend watching cross-country skiing in Luge. What? Waste of time? Did you see how bad the weather was around here? Special guest today, former co-host and long ago producer, Al Galdi, the king of analytics. We'll talk cha-cha-cha, Maryland hoops, and more. That plus another case of the internet making all of us worse human beings. You got about 45 minutes to kill, then buckle up and let's go.
Here we go.
All right, I know it's just one game, but I'll tell you what, that new look Cavs roster, though. Hello, everybody, and welcome. Monday, Feb 12, 2018. Thank you for your download. Thank you for your earballs. I hope to entertain for the next 45 or so minutes. Speaking of the Cavaliers and that big win in Boston on Sunday, not only was it a big win for the Cavaliers, but the other big winner was one Paul Pierce, who got to have his day uninterrupted by any Isaiah Thomas tribute video. Funny how that all worked out, isn't it? And somebody I heard said that he was scheduled to have his jersey retired by the University of Washington, but because he had, you know, worked it around the Celtics schedule, or no, I guess it would have been the Cavaliers schedule, because he had worked out the day to go up to Washington on an off day when the Cavaliers weren't playing, Isaiah Thomas is going to get to have his nice day up in Seattle. And it turns out since he was traded to the Lakers, oh no, the Lakers are playing that day, and so that too is going to have to be rescheduled. Funny how it all works out. The Olympics. It's the greatest thing ever. It's the worst thing ever. And those are not contradictory. They don't cancel each other out. They both exist in the same plane and in the same universe at one time. Let me explain why. First of all, here's what's great about the Olympics. What's great about the Olympics is the fact that America finally has an individual medalist in the event of luge. That's right. We have an Olympic medalist in luge, finally. His name is Chris Mazdzer. That's two Z's. Mazdzer. Although I think it's just pronounced Chris Mazder. He is a smiling, cocky, very media savvy. The guy's great in interviews. I've seen him a couple of times now. I shouldn't say cocky. I don't want to put it that way. That's a negative connotation. I would just say that he is a dynamic personality when you put the camera on him and you interview him. And he ended up taking silver in the men's individual luge, which is a first for our country. We have never had an individual men's medalist in luge. The way it went down was interesting because I was watching the final runs, and I saw where, you know, this guy Felix Loch of Germany. Felix Loch. Ooh, the German. Come on, Zabe. You're going to play the Burns German bite, right? Well, of course I'm going to play the Burns Germans bite.
Oh, another Friday is upon us.
Oh, sorry. What'll you be? Different Burns there. Burns, Germans.
Oh, yeah. The Germans are mad at me. I'm so scared. Ooh. The Germans. Uh-oh, the
stop
Germans
it.
Coming to get
stop
me.
That.
Oh, don't let the Germans come after
please
me.
Please stop the pretending
oh, no,
you're scared
the
game.
Are coming after me.
So the final run was by Felix Loch of Germany. Now, he was not going to knock out Masder for a medal, so he was already happy and celebrating, and his family and friends were there at the end of the run, and it was a great scene. So it's just going to be a matter of would Felix Loch win gold again for the third straight Olympics. He is like this German sledding phenom, a German lugeing phenom, a pedigree, because his father either was the coach or is the coach. It doesn't matter. His father was a lugeing legend himself, and as they said in the broadcast, he has been around luge runs ever since he was in a stroller. So here he comes down, and he ends up screwing up on one turn. You could barely see it. It went by in a blink. Just like, what happened there? And the announcer was like, oh, no! Whoa, what was that? And then he finishes off the stand. But what's amazing about winning a gold is the journey it takes to win a gold in a sport like luge, which I'm going to go out on a limb here and say, there's no money in luge, even if you are a multiple-time gold medal winner. Now, maybe Felix Loch back in Germany never pays for a meal, always has a big stein of beer hoisted in his honor, and he is known on every street corner. Maybe. I'm guessing even Felix Loch is not. In America, there's really no money in luge. There's no professional league for luge. You might get on a Wheaties box. You might get some engagements, speaking engagements post Olympics about, hey, and now we've got Olympic silver medalist Chris Masder to talk today about what it was like to win a medal in luge. And then there's, you know, the Holiday Inn off of some highway in Heartland America for $2,000. He's making appearances. Again, I'm not belittling. You might think, why are you belittling this guy? He's a great American. He's a champion. He won a silver. I'm not belittling. I'm saying it's even more amazing that he would struggle like this and fight like this to become a medalist for no money. According to this New York Post piece, give credit, Associated Press, as rerun by the New York Post. It was a medal that seemed almost improbable a few weeks ago when Masder, who finished the World Cup season not even close to the medal stand and 18th overall in the final rankings, 18th, by the way, went public with his season-long struggles in a social media post. Said Masder, quote, there comes a point where giving it everything you have and believing in yourself starts to fade away, and I am almost to that point. For some reasons unknown to myself, things are not working out as planned. He then said, though, there is a light somewhere in this dark cave that I feel I am stumbling aimlessly through at times, and you better damn believe I'm going to find it. So he got to work, says the Associated Press. He would tinker with his sled until 1 or 2 a.m. some nights. He would ask competitors if he could lay on their sleds and get ideas. That's sort of weird, right? Hey, can I lay on your sled? Yeah, just buy a dinner first. You know, just start slowly with it. He would lay on competitors' sleds and get ideas for what to do with his own. Oh, I see. Let's put power steering in this sled. I did not have that in mind. Somehow he found his groove again. Irony. Groove. Get it? Luge? Sledding? He ends up to win a silver medal. Did I mention the margin that it took to win a silver medal? The winner, David Gleischer of Austria, surprise winner, although the Austrians are no chumps when it comes to luge and bobsled. Their forte is really downhill skiing. Just like the Dutch's forte is cross-country, Austria, they're okay. The Germans are the kings of the ice sled. David Gleischer of Austria was the surprise winner. In his four runs at the sliding center in Pyeongchang, his time came out to 3 minutes, 10.702 seconds. That's right. They count up the four runs, all four, and they add them together. These runs are less than a minute each. And so what it takes to win a medal in luge is four great runs in which you're the fastest combined. 3 minutes, 10 seconds, 0.702. Second place, Mazder finished 3 minutes, 10 seconds, 0.728. So in other words, 26 one-hundredths of a second? I don't know how you'd count that going to the right of the decimal point. I believe the first decimal point is tenths of a second. The second decimal point is got to be a hundredths of a second. I guess the third would be thousandths of a second. So I think I'm right in saying this. It's 26 one-thousandths of a second different. In other words, the blink of not only my eye, the blink of a gnat's eye. Oh, you know, gnats don't have eyes. You get the point. It's a tiny, infinitesimal difference accumulated over three runs. Like one run in which the difference was 26 one-hundredths or one-thousandths of a second. Don't quote me on which one it is. It doesn't matter. The literal blink of an eye. If that was the difference in one run for the luge medal, that'd be amazing. It's over four runs. And this guy, for no money, is banging away late at night, frustrated, trying to figure out, why can't I sled faster? There to greet him after he finished his run and was insured at least a medal, which is all he really wanted. I mean, sure, he would want gold, but the point was, let's get on that podium. First things first. We've never been on the podium. Let's get on the podium. His family, his friends are there. They are in tears. They have traveled with him at all these competitions, no doubt, but they have traveled with him across the globe down to South Korea, paid who knows what for flights, paid who knows what for hotels, paid who knows what for rental cars and or shuttle buses, stood outside for hours and hours and hours in the bone-freezing cold to watch their son, their daughter, or excuse me, their son, their husband, their friend, their buddy, whomever, go whizzing by in an imperceptible and they couldn't have been happier for him. That is purity right there. That is the purity of sports and of striving and of trying to be better. And that's the greatest part of the Olympics. No money in it. It's one thing to do all that and know that you're going to be a first-round pick in the NBA and you're going to get money, money, money. Or as Cooley once said, books go away, money come to me. I love that about the Olympics. I will never get tired of stories like that. I will never get tired of that essential fact about these obscure winter games. People do it for the love of it, to try to achieve, and because there's something in them that says, I want to do this. I want to be one of the best in the world at this. Now to the bad part of the games. Did you know that they were only down, they almost ran out of bidding cities for the next Winter Olympics? Yes, they almost ran out of cities that even wanted to have the Olympics. It takes 10 years of planning just to be in the running to host the Olympics. 10 years of planning before they even give you an Olympics. How crazy is that? And not only that, but the city of Chicago spent an estimated $100 million on the campaign alone to host the 2016 Summer Games. And, of course, they lost. Boston famously pulled its bid for the 2024 Summer Games after a citizen group called No Boston Olympics convinced the city otherwise. That's great. That's almost like the Boo Ben Knopf of committees or citizens groups. Boo! Boo Olympics! No Olympics here! Go away! The No Boston Olympics, I love that name, said, are you crazy? We're going to waste a lot of money trying to host these things? Get out of here. 12 cities bid for the 2004 Games. Only 5 cities bid for the 2020 Games, and only 2 bid on the 2022 Winter Games, which is China and Kazakhstan. China ended up winning it. Although I really wished Borat would have lit the Olympic flame in the glorious, make good Republic of Kazakhstan. In 2014, current IOC President Thomas Bach suggested a list of 40 actions the IOC could take to shape the future of the Olympic movement. Yeah? How about don't charge an arm and a leg? How about don't have cost overruns? Did you know that apparently the last 50 years, every Olympics has gone over budget? The Sochi Winter Olympics went over budget by $41 billion. The budget was $10 billion. They went over it by $41. Also, bid cities used to make some nice money on the Olympics because they were getting a cut of the TV revenue. In the 90s, for example, it took 4% of revenue, the Olympic Committee did. They carved out 4% for themselves. Now they take 70% of the TV money. So the money that cities used to say, well, it's a pain in the ass. It's 10 years to apply. It costs a lot to build velodromes and ski jumps and luge runs. But guess what? We're going to make money in the end. We just got to stick with this. Nowadays, that's not even the case. These cities lose their ass. I'd like to say something's going to change. I'd like to hope things will be different or better. But, well, I've been around long enough to say I know better. Oh my God, JR! That's his music! I told you I was gonna bring on some friends of Zabe. I think our guest is a friend of Zabe. He only is my former co-host and my former protege, former producer. You know him now as the host of the Morning Blitz on ESPN 980. Hello, Galdi.
Zabe, what is up, my friend?
Cliche to use the Stone Cold intro. Good to see Stone Cold back recently.
He looks jacked too, brother.
looks like he's been doing a lot of high reps and eating a lot of what?
Oh, yeah, skinless chicken breasts and perhaps a few other items are entering the bloodstream. Who knows?
Skinless chicken and high reps. That, Galdi, that was one of your great contributions. That and cha-cha-cha, which we'll get to
yes,
in just a second. But, yeah, the skinless chicken and high reps. Sure, you're not jacking. You're not dosing. You're not juicing. You're working out right.
Austin looks as big today, if not bigger, than 20 years ago at his peak. Like, he's in his 50s now. He looks awesome.
Really?
Yeah, he looks really good.
Okay. By the way, speaking of doping, did you watch the 60 Minutes piece yesterday? Although you probably was on too late. What time do you go to bed, oh, by the way?
Yeah, I'm back to going to bed anywhere between like 5:30 and 6:30.
All right, so you would not have seen the 60 Minutes piece with the guy who blew the lid on the Russian doping that blew up the Sochi Olympics.
No, I want to see that, though, now that you say it.
It's great because basically, he said their scheme to evade the testing was a hole in the wall behind a cabinet through which they would pass the tainted samples of urine, and they would then whisk them out to another lab in Sochi where the Russians would somehow unlock the tamper-proof lids and then bring the piss back. They would replace it with better piss and bring it back and shove it through the hole in the wall.
That is, I mean, like, you talk about sophistication, right? We've had, like, the Wizinator over the years, things like
right.
that. That's pretty good.
Yeah, it was like a lab-sized Wizinator where they're like, well, why don't we just cut a hole, we'll pass them through, we'll fix them, and they'll send them back.
So, that is too good.
Anyway, all right, let's start with this. We've got a $1,000 beef to squash, you and I.
Uh-oh.
The lingering $1,000 RG3 bet, which has been hung up in customs because you tell me that I have not yet given you and your lovely bride a wedding gift. Is
well,
that right?
Was always my counter. It was, okay, I'm not forking over the G until I get the wedding gift, and then we can maybe negotiate.
Have you seen a wedding gift lately?
I have not, no.
Okay, good. I think that's for a reason. I want this thing to be perpetually hung up in customs. That's a better story for the bet than actually anyone actually paying anybody.
Yeah, exactly. Because I don't got $1,000 to give to anybody these days.
Well, then you shouldn't have bet the $1,000.
Well,
see?
It was more to make a point, which I was wrong on. I still can't get over that he got that kind of money. Although he lasted about 30 seconds with Cleveland.
He did. See, you and Cooley were kind of more right about that than me, in that your point at the time, and for those that are unfamiliar with the history of this bet, once RG3 was let go by the Redskins, I said that he would sign a contract for at least how much guaranteed?
It was like between
$5 million guaranteed.
Yeah, it was something like it was really low. Yeah.
Okay, and I think he got 1 year, $7 million guaranteed, or something like that, from the Browns. an old Hugh Jackson.
Yeah.
And so he barely made it by the skin of his teeth, but it was like the only offer he really had, and he's long since been out of the league ever since. So your point and Cooley's point was basically he's hanging on to playing in the league by a thread. And my point was like, no, he'll get passed around three or four more times. Right? Don't you recall that as essence of what we were saying?
And I think what I underestimated, and we saw that offseason with the Osweiler contract, was, and obviously we've seen it here with the Kirk stuff, is that these quarterbacks, even the worst of them, they get paid. They get something. And so he got more something than I thought he would get. But I don't know about you. I think he's done now. This is it. Like, he ain't coming back. He's in that Manziel territory, which you were right on, too, I do have to say, because I always thought that Manziel at some point would get a tryout with someone. And while he's trying to make a comeback here, I saw that clip of him on Good Morning America. Doesn't look like it's happening anytime.
He says he's diagnosed as bipolar.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
Maybe.
Why didn't they catch that earlier?
Good question.
What's the difference, Galdi, between being certified bipolar and just a douchebag who does too many drugs?
The former yields more sympathy.
Okay, yes exactly. Yeah. I just, it's so funny because there was definitely concerns, but no one really wanted to kind of go, hey, wait a minute, this guy is a bad guy. Of course, teams overlook bad guys coming out of the draft all the time, hoping and thinking, nah, he's going to straighten up and fly right. Reuben Foster, Galdi,
yes.
You saw him.
Yes.
Like, he had problems. He had a diluted drug test in college.
You know, I've always thought this, too, and this is a much different conversation, but how come everyone who commits murder doesn't plead insanity or mental illness in some way? Like, isn't that, like, the ultimate go-to defense? Because there's got to be something wrong with you if you're killing another human being without just cause, right? So, like, shouldn't that always be the defense?
That'd be a good place to start, but then you've got to prove you're insane.
Yeah, right.
Like, how do you do that effectively?
Yeah.
Who knows? Okay, so let's focus on the Kirk Cha-Cha-Cha, first of all. What was the inspiration for your great moniker of Cha-Cha-Cha, which was the back and forth between the Redskins and Redskins and Kirk and his agents that ultimately resulted in nothing?
So it really hit me one day because, you know, every morning you come in and you try to, as you know, right, you want to come up with stuff to talk about.
Something new.
And every morning it was something from Kirk or something from Bruce or something from Scott. It was always something. And it had become this back and forth dance. And so it got me to think, okay, what's a good dance I could use here to kind of gimmick this thing up? And so I went through a list of, all right, what would sound good? And
did you actually Google search dances?
I don't know if I did or not, but I went through, like, okay, there's like the waltz.
Do you know the cha-cha?
No, I have no concept of how to dance.
You didn't take dance classes in advance of your wedding with your beautiful bride?
No.
Because some couples do that, you know.
Oh, I know. No, I everything I learned about dancing, I learned from early 90s MTV. That's the extent of my dance knowledge.
There's break. There is.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
Flash.
Yeah.
What other kinds of dancing are there?
The running man. I mean, there's all kinds of, like, individual things. Shopping cart, you know, you can go. But yeah,
here,
so
I'm on list of dance categories on Wikipedia. Holy crap, there are a lot of them.
Electric slide, right?
First of all, it's broken down into subcategories. There must be 100 different dances. Okay, so you came up with the cha-cha. By the way, you'd say that every day there would be something either between from Bruce or from Kirk. There was always something, yet, Galdi, it was always nothing.
And that was the point, exactly. It was empty calorie talk. It all
exactly.
meant nothing in the end. And so it became this comical back and forth. You didn't know who to believe, what to believe, and yet it went on and on and on. And it reminded me also, and I played this clip quite a bit, of when Kramer on Seinfeld talked about the timeless art of seduction. And
I don't think I've ever played that one.
Yeah, it's a good one because it's about a guy and a girl, and she pursued, and I withdrew, and I pursued, and she withdrew, and so we danced. And that's what this was. This was one guy would say something, another guy would say something, but ultimately it led to nothing.
Yeah, and the funny thing was that it was such things like Bruce saying, of course, we'll get a deal done.
Right.
Can't be that hard.
Right.
And the suckers amongst our fan base, or the hopelessly hopeful, let me put it that way, they would then say, see, relax, you guys are making something out of nothing. And Kirk would respond to the, of course, we'll get a deal done. It shouldn't be that hard. Kirk would respond with, oh, of course I want to be here. This is where I want to play football. And we'd say, really, is it? And it, like you said, empty calories versus empty calories.
Yeah, and the other part of it, too, was how unnecessary it was. And that was, of course, driven home with the Garoppolo extension last week, where it's like, here's a guy, 7 career starts, and more than a month out of free agency, they get an extension done. And it's like, you see how easy it can be. It doesn't have to.
It was easy, Galdi, because they did what? They jumped over
right.
the baseline of what the franchise tag would have cost and added 15% on top of that and said, this should do you. And Garoppolo said, sure.
Right. And both sides genuinely wanted to make a deal happen. So it's not as nearly as hard as
no.
we made it out to be.
It's not as hard if you truly want the guy. But you and I think, no, they never wanted Kirk. He was never their guy.
No, which is funny, though, because you can argue, and I would, that Kirk is one of the great day three draft picks this decade. And why the organization never fully embraced that of, we made a really shrewd pick in the fourth round of 2012.
Ah, you say we, because I think they realized it was Shanahan that made that pick.
But it was all Mike, really? Like, nobody else was in on that? Like,
You know, knowing the way the Redskins work, Aldi, I think when Mike said in the war room, let's take this kid in the fourth round, they're like, eh, whatever. But, like, they thought our guy is RG3. This guy you're taking is going to be a perennial backup. He'd be the next Husted. Or not Husted. Who is the Stanford quarterback that was a seventh rounder that looked good?
Oh, boy. Oh, Husak. Todd Husak.
Husak. Not yeah. Husted, but Husak. Yeah. Todd Husak. They probably thought he'll be another Colt Brennan or a Todd Husak. And you can just have him and he's going to wither away. But we've got our guy RG3.
Yeah, it's just funny to me because Bruce technically at the time was the general manager. His title was executive vice president / general manager. And even though, like you said, that was a Mike pick, the Kirk pick, you still would think there could be some rewriting of history. And you say, hey, look, I was the GM. I took him. We embrace him. He's our guy. We're so proud of this pick. And it's like you never got the sense of that these last few years.
That said, how psyched are you for Alex Smith?
Well, look. I think Kirk's a better quarterback. I hate the circumstances that led us to this. I have a lot of questions about Alex and his age, and he's a guy who's only going to stay the same or get worse, not get better. But he is, I think, an upper half of the NFL quarterback. He's a guy you can win with. And so from that standpoint, I'm excited. But do I like how this whole thing played out? No. Do I look at this and say, boy, was this really the best course of action? I don't know how anyone can say that with any kind of certainty right now.
So you're worried about his age? See, like, one thing about the deal I don't care that much about is the age difference.
Okay.
Because I think for the usability portion of the contract, Alex Smith will be fine. He's obviously a guy who's dedicated to how he is fitness-wise. He's no McNabb, in other words. You look at the guy and you're like, okay, this guy's dialed in. I think he'll play as well as Alex Smith can play deep into his 30s. The big question for me is, how good can he be with us, in our system, with our talent set, which I think is not as good as Kansas City's right
yeah,
now?
Yeah, I think that's accurate. But I also would say with Kirk, there still was that room for improvement. Like this past season, he got better at the off-schedule play, step forward in terms of improvement. With Alex, he is what he is at this point. Like, I don't see him taking a step forward in any measurable way. The only hope here is that he just stays at where he's at, which is a top 15 guy. With Kirk, I think there's still room for growth. The other thing with Alex, too, is while numerically he's not that much older than Kirk, it's like 4-plus years, there's a lot more NFL mileage on Alex's body, right? He came into the league in 2005. Kirk didn't come into the league until 2012.
Right.
And that is something I would be concerned about. But, yeah, I mean, I'm
he also played more early on in his career. And got beat up a ton early in his career when it was looking like this guy's a bust.
Yes. Yeah, and that is one of the unique things about the Alex Smith story, right? He went from being a total bust of a number one overall pick to a guy who's actually had a pretty nice career now.
Yeah, I'm trying to think. There probably is no comp of a guy who was taken in the top five who was declared a bust and then somehow resurrected himself and then somehow got traded for by a team in Kansas City who then was happy to have him before trading him to the Redskins, where he may be pretty good again.
Yeah, no, it's very hard to find. He's had a very unique career.
Yeah. So did you enjoy battling all the people? Do you ever comprehend how split the fan base became over Kirk? Did that not blow you away like it did me, taking calls from some people and getting texts and emails from the vitriolic hatred for our own record-setting quarterback. I could never get my head over that.
What blew me away was how we went from one ultra-divisive quarterback saga with Robert to one that you could argue was even more divisive than the Kirk saga. Like, that to me, that is still incredible to me, that you followed one soap opera with one that you could argue was even larger. I thought we would never have anything like the Robert thing again.
How about the fact that Robert was, factually speaking, a bust, and yet some people would still say he wasn't given a chance? I know you've taken those calls before.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
And Kirk was factually, undeniably a success with franchise record-setting seasons, and yet some insist he was not that good.
Right, and people kept moving the goalpost on Kirk, too, to where he's not a starting quarterback, to he's not a very good starting quarterback, to where he's just a bunch of empty numbers.
He's a starting quarterback who's not worth that much money.
Right, right. It was like, geez, can you concede that this guy has surpassed expectations? Can you please do that? And they, way too many people wouldn't do that.
Yeah, and when it comes to stats, I love it when people cite rings and win losses.
Oh,
like,
God.
Those are not stats.
Oh. Makes That's, me sick.
Here's a stat for you. How many playoff games has he won?
Yeah.
Wrong. That's not a stat, you dummy.
Yeah, I know.
That's just
know.
A number. It's not a stat. Speaking of stats, so advanced metrics, analytics, stats, and bullshit.
Yes.
Let's sort out the four categories. First of all, is there a difference between so-called advanced metrics and, quote, analytics?
No, it's kind of – it's like one way of saying each thing. Or one way of saying the same thing, I should say.
Okay, and what are so-called analytics?
You know, it's kind of like you know it. It's like porn. You know it when you see it.
Okay.
It's basically what you would deem a non-traditional statistic for
traditional,
a sport.
Like, let's take baseball. Traditional stats are RBIs, batting percentage, that kind of stuff.
Yeah, right. And so analytics would be like wins above replacement.
War.
Like war.
How about BABIP, my favorite, you told me.
BABIP is
balls,
a big one.
Balls against, no, wait, what was it?
Batting average.
Batting
on balls
average against
play.
Balls in play, yeah, BABIP.
Yeah.
VORP, value over replacement player.
It's like an early version of war, is VORP. Yeah.
Oh, it is.
Yeah,
it's son like, of war?
Yes, it's premature war.
Or not son of war, it's grandfather of war.
Exactly, yeah.
Do you believe in war?
I love war.
And do you know how it's calculated?
I've looked. I mean, it's ultra complicated, the math, and I don't pretend to understand the math.
Is
but,
it a chalkboard the size of Goodwill Hunting that calculates war?
If you have an hour and a half to kill, go to Baseball Reference, and they lay out step by step how they compute war. It will put you to sleep. It's
really?
Unbelievable. Oh, my God, yeah.
To have mathematical people that also know baseball, though, help confirm its usefulness.
Yeah, well, war is based on an economic principle of trying to drill down value into one number. So it's not meant as gospel. It's just, okay, how do we take everything a baseball player does and boil it down to one number? So you take his offense, his defense, his base running, you put it into one pot. And you
but,
try
you,
to
but you weight all those elements, right?
Exactly, yeah.
Because
exactly.
Base running is not as important as your hitting or
Correct.
Hitting for power.
Correct. And there are those who say that defense weighs too heavily in war. That's a debate among us nerds. You know,
okay.
How much should you value defense?
So they boil it all into one pot, and they come up with a number, which is wins above replacement. Now, define replacement.
So a replacement-level player is like a 4A player. So too good for AAA, but not really that good for Major League Baseball. And the idea is if this guy got hurt and you went with a replacement player – how much better is this guy versus that replacement player you'd be going with?
Okay, and replacement player would be just a guy you pick up from anywhere or AAA
yeah.
level player?
Yeah, like again, like a 4A guy. So he's too good for AAA, but he's not a guy you would deem starter worthy for the major league level.
Okay. Now, in addition to what we'll call advanced metrics or analytics or stats and numbers that are being cooked up to sort of figure out what guys really matter in sports, we're entering a whole new age, as you know, Galdi, in which we are measuring things that we never were able to measure before.
Yes.
And in specific, a stat or a metric or whatever you want to call it that I liked was called TISAL
okay.
for John Wall. Time spent standing or walking.
Oh, yes.
Apparently, John Wall's TISAL is measured by the high-tech missile tracking system that's installed in NBA arenas, discovered that the only guy that stood around more was Dirk Nowitzki, who's 106 years old.
Yes.
Not a good look right there.
No. Now, that better be because of the knee. I tend to think it was. But, yeah, this is the next level for analytics, Zabe. It's things like StatCast in baseball, Next Gen Stats in football.
What's StatCast in baseball?
So it's this
They measure, don't they, how close fielders get to fielding baseballs?
Yeah, so they measure all kinds of stuff, but that's one of the big ones is finally
exit
now
velocity of bat
launch angles, okay, things like that, route efficiency on, so on a fly ball, does the fielder take the best route to the ball? Because what we've learned over the years is that just because you make a diving catch doesn't mean you made a great play. You may have taken an inefficient route to the ball and then had to dive for the ball. So things like that have popped up. But yeah, in the NBA now they have these tracking mechanisms that count how many steps a guy runs, how much, like you said, he walks,
his
things
work
like that.
Rate.
Oh, yeah, it's tremendous.
How many times he crosses half court on fast breaks, which in the case of Kevin Duckworth would have been once every 7,936 fast breaks.
May he rest in peace.
May he rest in peace. Sorry, don't speak ill of the dead.
No, never.
Well, this is some interesting shit. It's like it'll be a ripe area to be abused and to be misunderstood and to be misapplied into untruths, but there's a potential to really rethink entirely how certain sports work.
Yes, and I think it's we're trying to tackle things that we've never had a good grip on. So like in baseball, people have gone by errors for years to measure defense, and it's such a faulty way of looking at defense. So there's got to be a better way. Like that was always the thought process. So this is a better way. It doesn't mean it's perfect. It doesn't mean it's gospel, but it's a better way of examining, okay, who's good and who's not when it comes to doing this.
Yeah. All right, before you get out of here today, I thank you for your time. You're a very busy man. Was it leg and back day today? On a Monday, leg and back
No, today is going to be chest and tries.
Beautiful.
Yeah, big day.
All right, how do you feel about your alma mater, Maryland basketball?
It saddens me, and not just because they're probably not going to make the tournament, but it's hard to remember a time in which Maryland basketball just hasn't mattered so much.
Right.
And that is particularly painful. It's just not on the radar for a lot of people. And I remember 15 years ago, I think Maryland basketball was the number two in this city after the Redskins.
Well, yeah, you're right, because it was the last championship we've had.
Yeah.
Apologies, DC United.
Yeah, right. You're going to get those. Tweet at the Zabe.
Yeah,
at
go ahead. Zabe. Don't at me, as they like to say on Twitter.
Yeah. But now, man, I mean, where would you put it? 5-6? I mean, it's really fallen in recent years.
It's really bad. And how do you feel about Turgeon? Are you ready to say if they don't make the tournament, time to make a change?
I'm not. I think, first of all, there's a tremendous irony here because he's gotten a bunch of recruits that Gary Williams supposedly never got, but it has not translated into the success on the court that we thought it would. I think he's a good coach. I don't think he's a great coach. I think, though, there are two things that he's got to take a long, hard look at. A, he keeps getting these highly rated recruiting classes, and these guys end up just not being as good as they're built up to be. And then B, they've had an issue with guys coming to the program and they just don't seem to get appreciably better. And one of the examples of this guy Michael Tchaikovsky, who I thought was going to be a stud a few years ago. I thought he was going to be better than Alex Len, who wasn't that great to begin with, and he's just kind of stayed the same. And it's like, where is the improvement? Where's the guy you look at and you say, wow, 2 years ago he was this, and now he's so much more? It's like you haven't had that, and I think that's been particularly disappointing.
Turgeon missed the first 3 years he was in, then made the last tournament the last 3 years, but this year looks like a miss. And I'm just assuming your checks are still going as alumni checks, your big, fat, sweet radio checks going to support the program?
Every month. Look, I think Turgeon's a good guy. I think he's a good defensive coach. I know the X's and O's nerds get on him for his offense, but I don't think they made the wrong hire in getting him, but he has to – and they've given him a lot of time in his contract, too, which is another thing. He's got a ton of time. But, man, it's been really disappointing to see how off the radar Maryland basketball has fallen.
Galdi, I can say without any reservation I miss you and Cooley in the afternoons, but I'm glad you're thriving in the pre-dawn hours on the team 980.
That's right.
That'd be the
That's
morning right. Blix. You want to plug anything on the way out the door here?
I don't know, podcast, you know, yeah. We podcast the show every day, and we get a lot of downloads on that, so off the app, off the website, and yeah, man, 5 to 7. If you can't be with us live, join us when it's good for you.
What about when, don't you do a weekend baseball show?
Oh, yeah, Chin Music, Saturday mornings, 9 to 10. You can podcast that bad boy, too. If you want to hear more about BABIP, we talk about it all the time.
Exactly. All right, we'll save the state of WWE and XFL 2 for another visit at another time.
I look forward to it.
Galdi, you're the best. Thanks.
Thank you. Sure.
Let's end with this today. Again, the internet has proven it is making all of us worse people. In fact, awful people at that. You may or may not have heard of this story, but apparently Kim Cattrall's brother was missing and then was found dead. Kim Cattrall being the elder cougar siren on Sex and the City, the once popular HBO show, which has been dormant for quite some time. They made two movies out of it. We're going to make a third movie, but apparently Cattrall did not want to be part of it. I guess we know more now why. So after her brother ends up missing and then dead, Sarah Jessica Parker, the lead in Sex and the City, sent out the following social media post. Dearest Kim, my love and condolences to you and yours, and Godspeed to your beloved brother, XX. That then made Kim Cattrall reply back on social media for all the public to see. Your continuous reaching out is a painful reminder of how cruel you really were then and now. Let me make this very clear, if I haven't already. You are not my family. You are not my friend. So I'm writing to tell you one last time to stop exploiting our tragedy in order to restore your nice girl persona, quote unquote. Cattrall then linked to an October article in New York Post headlined Inside the Mean Girl Culture That Destroyed Sex and the City. In there, apparently Cattrall said that she was not friends. Her relationship with her co-stars was, quote, toxic, and said that Sarah Jessica Parker could have been nicer than she was. Okay. Why would Kim Cattrall do this? Oh, that's right. It's the internet and people have lost their ever-loving minds. Why would you then make this public? I guess it's a way to put a sick burn on Sarah Jessica Parker in public, I suppose. Maybe she was genuinely sick of Sarah Jessica Parker glossing over the fact that they aren't friends, and how dare you give out condolences for my now dead brother. But when Kim Cattrall says, I'm tired of you using our tragedy to exploit in order to restore your nice girl persona, what has Kim Cattrall done? She has exploited her own tragedy of her own brother to settle a score with Sarah Jessica Parker publicly. She just did the thing. She used this occasion to go, oh, because who else would know that, oh, Kim Cattrall and Sarah Jessica Parker have a beef. And, ooh, here's a condolence tweet or something that, you know, Sarah Jessica Parker has sent out. No one's going to know. This is going to wash under the bridge. If you want this time and this moment to be about your brother's life and the tragedy that you are enduring, why would you then come out and make it about you and decide you're going to slam Sarah Jessica Parker as this bitch? Which, by who knows? Probably, yeah, she probably is. And you're telling me, Kim Cattrall, that you are as sweet and pure as the driven snow and you never were a bitch? Really? By the way, Kim Cattrall is an old bag. I just got to say that. Okay, she's not nearly as hot as she thinks she is. None of the gals on that show are nearly as hot as they think they are. Well, why'd you watch so much? I watched my share. I didn't watch a ton. I watched my share. But she made a ton of money off that show. Short of being stabbed in the thigh with a 6-inch buck knife by Sarah Jessica Parker, you know what, maybe, Kim Cattrall, you should just shut up and count your money. Because last I checked, other than that movie Mannequin that you were in, you hadn't done shit until the show came along. You got fabulously rich. They got fabulously rich. You made two shitty movies on top of an already suspect show itself that was a hit for a brief period. You got to really drag this stuff up now? You got a beef with Sarah? Then call her ass. Call her ass privately and air it the hell out. But it's the internet, and it's 2018, and people continue to lose their minds. It's just, come on. Let's stop being awful people and think just for a second. That'll do it for me today. Thank you for listening. You know the drill. Tell two friends. Leave a positive review. Harangue people on message boards. You gotta listen to the Zabecast. It's the greatest thing ever. Download, subscribe at all the major podcast outlets, iTunes, Google Play. Now go wax your luge sleds, everybody, and we will see you next time.